356,000 babies will be born around the world, 90% of them in the developing world.
Babies, 6 billion.
A struggle for water, food,
and all the children that follow.
Basic education and health care.
This is a vastly bigger baby boom. It's going to define the society of the 21st century.
So as we've seen this week in our explorations of what it means to live on a 7 billion person planet, the experience of population is very different in different places in the world. As the world's population is set to reach 7 billion on Monday, October 31st, according to the United Nations calculations, in the U.S. it's only about 309 million. But the aggregate population and birth rate numbers for the U.S. hide a significant disparity between rich and poor, majority and minority. According to the U.S. Census, the average American woman will have 2.1 children. Goofy sounding statistic. I mean, how do you buy clothes for that 0.1 child? But you get the idea. 2.1 children technically maintains population growth in the U.S., but it doesn't begin to tell the story of what's being called a fertility divide in America in 2011. Sharon Lerner, author of The War on Moms, on Life in a Family-Unfriendly Nation, and senior fellow at the think tank Demos, joins us now. Good morning, Sharon.
Good morning.
So what would you describe as this fertility divide, birth rates differing from various groups in the United States, and what does it conceal about the future of America, demographically speaking?
Well, as you mentioned, we are at replacement level. So we have enough people overall in the whole country to keep us going, to keep supplying our workers and our Social Security, and to keep us, you know, at a steady population level. But when you look at who is having babies and who is not having babies, you see that there's really a divide in this country, that there are really two distinct profiles when it comes to fertility. And what struck me about this, and I've been thinking about this for a while, but around the same time, two studies have come out that showed, that really highlighted this. One of them showed, it was a study of corporate professionals, and this was women between the ages of 33 and 46, and it found that 43% of them in the sample were childless. So that's a pretty striking number, and there were subgroups that were even higher. I think Asian women were 53% of them were childless in this age group. At the same time, on the other side, what I call the reproductive divide, we have increasing numbers of unplanned pregnancies and births among poor women. And when you look at how they compare to the rest of the population, it's pretty staggering. Poor women, women living in poverty, have 6 times the unplanned birth rate of everyone else. So on the one hand, you have more and more women remaining childless, and on the other hand, you have more and more women having unplanned births, and neither of them is exactly what anyone wants.
And you know, it really shows a portrait of the United States being in something of a bubble. The rest of the world is experiencing this 7 billion person planet, but we're experiencing something fundamentally different in the U.S., and many of the statistics that you describe right there are actually going to exacerbate this wealth gap that we're also talking about this morning, the rich getting richer and the population of poor people both increasing and their economic improvements getting smaller and smaller.
Yeah, I mean, there are two things. Women, the thing is, when you live in poverty and you have a child, you're more likely, it increases your chances of remaining in poverty. So definitely that is true. One thing I'd say, though, about how we're an anomaly in terms of the fertility, what some people call a fertility crisis, that among certain populations, we're dipping below 2.1%. There are, of course, many countries, developed countries, where that's true now. Over 100 countries have below replacement fertility rates. And in these places, you know, they say, wow, they've recognized this in many of these places as a problem and have had policy responses. So one of the things that happens in some of these countries is they change their policies and say, hey, there's a reason people aren't having children. And one of the reasons they think it is because there aren't enough supportive policies to make it possible. So they say, hey, in Germany, you know, they had a fertility rate that dipped to 1.3%. They said, okay, we're going to increase the amount of paid leave. We're going to increase the time that people can remain at home after having a birth. And, of course, we have nothing like that here.
And should we? And if these trends continue, what do you think America looks like in 50 years? And what would be the problem?
Well, I mean, absolutely we should. I think that what we're seeing here, so we're seeing two really distinct problems, right? We're seeing people who have more children perhaps than they want and less control over it than they want. We see people who have fewer children than they want. We have studies showing, you know, how the number of children that people have often isn't as many as they say they want. But, you know, so there are these two distinct problems, but I do think that in an overarching way, they're representing one bigger problem, which is that the increasing difficulty for everyone to both succeed financially and have children at the same time. And I certainly think it should not be as difficult as it is.
We're talking with Sharon Lerner, who's the author of The War on Moms, on life in a family-unfriendly nation. She's a senior fellow at the think tank Demos, joining us from Washington State this morning. Well, you know, we've talked about this $7 billion threshold for the planet. You know, is $1 billion a threshold for the United States, or are we not going to see that? Are we slowing so rapidly, even given the replacement rate that you talk about there, that, you know, we'll peak out at something well short of a billion in the U.S.?
Well, I mean, I do think that 2.1 is a healthy level, and it is at replacement. I think it means that we're holding steady, and that in and of itself isn't the problem. I think the problem, as you mentioned, I mean, one is that we have this schism in our country, and neither end, at least in terms of fertility, I think, is anyone getting exactly what they want.
Yeah, and in the land of, you know, 40 acres and a mule, that's a rude awakening in the United States and something we're going to experience much more over the next century. Sharon Lerner, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
Sharon Lerner is the author of The War on Moms, on life in a family-unfriendly nation. She's a senior fellow at the think tank Demos. She joined us from Washington State. Thanks again.
We want to move from the discussion of the gender gap to another gap that we've been talking a lot about, income and wealth. We talked earlier about the growing inequality in America that's developed and really gotten enormous over the past 30 years. What does that look like? John in Palm Beach, Florida texts this. My most vivid illustration of income inequality is this. You are standing on a grand sweeping balcony overlooking the ocean on Palm Beach Island. The valet pulls your car around from a parking lot full of Bentleys, and you drive off the island past mansions. In 5 minutes, you're across the bridge into West Palm Beach, driving past rundown buildings, gritty street corners of drugs, prostitution, and desperate violence. 5 minutes. That's an incredible image.
Well, South Florida is the place to experience the wealth gap in the United States. That is for sure.
It's not the only place. There's lots of places where you can literally go across the street and see an incredible change in the way a community looks.
But that image is striking. We also got one from Brooklyn. Katie wrote us at thetakeaway.org. Income inequality also comes in the form of exploiting young grads who will work for less and even for free to get ahead or have a job at all. This devalues the work itself and pushes out older workers who need to make more to support families.
That goes back to our student loan issue as well. Give us a comment on whatever you hear on the radio at 8778-MYTAKE or post to our site, thetakeaway.org. I'm Celeste Headlee.
And I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.